In June 1974, a very, very strange thing happened in Britain. Heathrow Airport, then as now the busiest airport in the UK and one of the most important in the world, was suddenly invaded. In a fast operation, 400 British military personnel plus police began to isolate the airport, using armoured vehicles to set up checkpoints and roadblocks, while armed soldiers and police began checking vehicles and drivers' documents. The managers of Heathrow had not been forewarned, and soon one of the world's largest and busiest airports was basically under military jurisdiction. The official reason given to the press was that this was an anti-terrorist operation, the 1970s suffering badly with terrorist outrages globally. However, when news of this action, codenamed Operation Marmion, reached 10 Downing Street, the home of the British Prime Minister, it caused considerable alarm in the Prime Minister's office. The Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, had not been informed of such an operation due to take place. This was unprecedented. To Wilson, Marmion signalled that his fears, which had been growing for several years, were justified. To Wilson and others around him, it seemed as though the army was sending a signal to Downing Street. It was flexing its power to show how it could, if necessary, stage a coup and take power. Ludicrous though this statement may seem to us over 50 years later, the army's takeover of Heathrow Airport deeply concerned the government of the day, a government that was becoming very unpopular in some quarters, and the Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, suspected at the time, was being intrigued against by a group of right-wing political, intelligence and military leaders that were seemingly debating direct action to remove Wilson and the Labour Party from office. The story began during Wilson's first period as Prime Minister in the 1960s. In October 1964, Wilson managed to form a Labour government with only a majority of 4 MPs. And in March 1966, Wilson decided to hold a fresh general election, hoping this time to win a larger majority. Wilson was quite a popular figure at the time, very good on television, and famous for his pipe and Gamex raincoat, his warm working-class accent contrasting with the usual privately educated politicians that Britain had become accustomed to. Wilson defeated Conservative Party leader Edward Heath, securing 363 seats in the House of Commons against 253 for the Conservatives and 12 for the Liberal Party. But despite having a large majority, the country was in crisis, mostly economic in nature. With falling exports and strike actions, the value of the pound continued to fall, and it was clear that by the end of 1967 there would be a massive trade deficit, with an increasing drain of Britain's gold reserves. In November 1967, Wilson devalued the pound from $2.80 to $2.40. During 1968, Wilson cut government spending by £750 million and raised tariffs on cigarettes, alcohol and petrol, and at the same time, the trades unions demanded wage increases, with significant strike action amongst dockers and car workers, Wilson failing to reform the unions. Unemployment continued to rise, and key industries such as coal mining, shipbuilding, textiles and railways continued to contract. The gravity of the situation faced by the country caused some elements to look to a solution outside of the usual democratic avenues. On the 8th of May 1968, a secret meeting took place in London. It was arranged on the request of Cecil King, chairman of Daily Mirror Newspapers and of the International Publishing Corporation, and a director of the Bank of England. King also had a very good relationship with the British intelligence services, MI5 and 6, and with the CIA in America. At the meeting also were Hugh Cudlip, a chairman of the International Publishing Group, and the other two men present were Sir Solly Zuckerman, the British government's chief scientific adviser, an admiral of the fleet, the first Earl Mountbatten of Burma, a World War II hero who had been Supreme Allied Commander, Southeast Asia, and the last Viceroy of India, and from 1959 to 65, Chief of the Defence Staff, and he had also been First Sea Lord, the head of the Royal Navy. Great-uncle and mentor to the then Prince Charles. King outlined his views on the situation facing the country under Wilson's Labour government and Wilson's shortcomings as Prime Minister. MI5, the British Security Service, had maintained a file on Wilson for decades under the codename Henry Worthington, and indeed in 1964, shortly before Wilson had won the election, James Angleton, head of counterintelligence at CIA, had told MI5 that according to information he had received, Harold Wilson was a KGB agent. Angleton asked MI5 to keep the allegations out of political circles, which it did. MI5 also received further information from two Czechoslovak defectors alleging that the Labour Party had been infiltrated by Soviet intelligence, providing a list of Labour MPs and trade unionists who were, allegedly, Soviet agents. This information may have been leaked to certain figures on the right in Britain, including newspaper proprietors, and we know, for example, that King had strong links to both British and US intelligence. At the London meeting in May 1968, King said that he foresaw a crisis just around the corner. Wilson's government would disintegrate, and there would be bloodshed in the streets, and the armed forces would be involved. King said the people would look to someone like Lord Mountbatten, a respected national hero, and propose that Mountbatten should become the temporary leader of a new administration to take charge of the country, to restore order and public confidence, backed by other intelligent and capable men. King then asked Mountbatten if he would agree to become that leader of a new administration under such circumstances. Mountbatten asked Zuckerman for his advice. Zuckerman said the plan amounted to treason and he left the meeting. Mountbatten also agreed that it was treason and departed. Cecil King then took the interesting step of overriding the editorial independence of the Daily Mirror, instructing the paper to publish a front-page article he had written that demanded Wilson be removed through some sort of extra-parliamentary action. The board of the International Publishing Corporation, which owned the Daily Mirror, met and demanded King's resignation. He refused, and he was dismissed by the board on the 30th of May 1968. Interestingly, King did have some support, including from the Times newspaper, its editor William Rees-Mogg calling for a coalition governance of Britain on the 8th of December 1968 in an article titled The Danger to Britain. Lord Mountbatten's part in any putative plot appears to have been deeper than let on by many books and newspapers. The meeting was held in Mountbatten's London residence in Belgravia. Though Mountbatten reportedly backed away from involvement in a coup, research by my literary agent, the renowned biographer Andrew Loney, suggests that the Queen was aware of the coup plot and Mountbatten's part in it. The Queen was reportedly, quote, desperately worried over the whole situation and denounced the coup as, quote, rank treachery. She basically talked Mountbatten out of any further involvement. The threat posed to the British monarchy by such a plot was obvious. If such an undemocratic thing were to occur in Britain, headed by a member of the royal family, it could have precipitated a constitutional crisis, and the Queen, of course, knew this. Mountbatten was the mentor and great-uncle of the future King, Charles. The monarchy itself could have been brought down by such associations. If a plot existed, it seems to have been according to several authors and journalists and intelligence officers lodged within MI5 itself. Harold Wilson had become leader of the Labour Party in 1963 following the unexpected and sudden death of leader Hugh Gaitskell. In the controversial book Spycatcher, published in 1987 and initially banned under Thatcher's regime in the UK, the former deputy head of MI5, Peter Wright, recalled that Gaitskell's doctor had contacted MI5 shortly after Gaitskell's death, reporting the death as suspicious. The head of Soviet counterintelligence at MI5 had interviewed the doctor, who told him that Gaitskell had died from a disease called lupus disseminata, which attacks the body's organs. It was rare in temperate climates like Britain's, and there was no evidence that Gaitskell had been anywhere where he could have caught such a disease. MI5 sent Peter Wright to talk to the chief doctor at Porton Down, Britain's top-secret chemical and biological warfare establishment. The doctor stated that he and his staff had absolutely no idea how Gaitskell could have contracted the disease. MI5, already suspicious of Harold Wilson's loyalties, hence their file on him, suspected that Gaitskell might have been assassinated by the KGB to ensure that Wilson became Labour Party leader and led the party into a general election with a good chance he would become Prime Minister. Wilson had visited the USSR multiple times when he worked for an East-West trading organisation, and MI5 feared that he had been compromised in some way by the KGB to work for Soviet interests. It would not have been the first time that the KGB had entrapped or framed Western visitors to the USSR. Wilson also maintained several friendships with Eastern European emigre businessmen, some of whom were also being watched intensely by MI5. The 1968 plot involving Lord Mountbatten and others appeared to have gone no further, but in fact plotting continued at a very high level. Notably, it appears within MI5 itself. With Harold Wilson returned to office as Prime Minister in 1974 following a general election, and as Peter Wright noted in his book Spycatcher, quote, as events moved to their political climax in early 1974 with the election of a minority Labour government, MI5 was sitting on information which, if leaked, would undoubtedly have caused a political scandal of incalculable consequences. The news that the Prime Minister himself was being investigated would, at the least, have led to his resignation. The point was not lost on some MI5 officers, end quote. Wright noted that some of his colleagues held a very dim view of Wilson. He quotes one of the younger officers saying to him in 1974, quote, Wilson's a bloody menace, and it's about time the public knew the truth, end quote. Wright states that some MI5 officers did leak details of the intelligence gathered on leading Labour Party figures, including Wilson, to sympathetic persons. Some 30 MI5 officers were known to have approved of this scheme. The June 1974 sudden takeover by elements of the British Army of Heathrow Airport caused Wilson genuine alarm. Was it a warning shot against the Prime Minister, letting him know that, if it chose, the military was more than capable of taking control of the country? Further evidence has emerged that senior retired military leaders were involved in creating private militia-type groups in the UK to assist in domestic matters should the need arise, effectively private armies. General Sir Walter Walker, who had proved extremely successful in Britain's campaign against communist terrorists in Malaya, and until 1972 was Commander-in-Chief Allied Forces Northern Europe, argued publicly that there was a, quote, communist Trojan horse in our midst, with its fellow travellers wriggling their maggoty way inside its belly, end quote. Another outspoken opponent of Wilson was David Stirling, the legendary founder of the SAS in World War II. Stirling said the left had, quote, a stead encroachment on the public enterprise system, together with the forcing of trade union members onto the executive boards of companies, and was a realizable threat of a magnitude this country has never faced before, end quote. Stirling also argued for a volunteer organization to be in place in case of a crisis. Another man urging for some direct intervention in political affairs was Brian Crozier, a journalist and a senior staff member of the secretive Information Research Department, part of the British Foreign Office during the Cold War, a propaganda department. Crozier gave talks to serving army officers discussing the benefits of military coups. Allied to the plotting and Operation Marmion, the Heathrow Airport takeover, which incidentally was repeated again in July and September 1974, again under the cover of anti-terrorist operations, there was Operation Clockwork Orange, named for the Stanley Kubrick film, which occurred from 1973 onwards. Northern Ireland at this time was a top political topic, the province in a state of civil war from 1969 between the IRA on the one side and the loyalist paramilitaries on the other, with the British Army stuck in between, trying to keep the peace. Many felt that Harold Wilson was not handling Northern Ireland properly. Particularly many serving and former army officers and intelligence officers believed Britain should be acting with a heavier hand against the IRA and others. In secret, right-wing members of the security services launched a disinformation campaign at British MPs and journalists. The Clockwork Orange Group possibly included a unit of SAS made up of specially trained Northern Ireland personnel. Journalists from foreign news organisations would be given briefings and shown forged documents that purported to show that certain Labour MPs were speaking at Irish Republican rallies or were receiving secret deposits in Swiss bank accounts. It was a smear campaign, or what is called black propaganda, and it continued until 1975. Throughout the period when Operation Marmion was launched three times by the army within England. Now, of course, ordinary soldiers taking part in these operations against Heathrow Airport genuinely thought they were taking part in anti-terrorist drills, as did the police. But, of course, at the most senior level, there must have been orders coming from the plotters themselves. Operations Marmion and Clockwork Orange made Wilson fearful that he was being targeted for a military coup. Later, he would tell journalists that an element within MI5 was behind the coup and had worked to force his resignation. Wilson spoke of two military coups plotted against him, one in the late 1960s and the other in the mid-1970s, and as we have seen, it seems to be so. And then Wilson was gone. His second term in office had been a mixed bag economically. In 1974, the top rate of income tax was 83%. In 1975, unemployment continued to rise, passing 1 million in April. There was a global recession and stagflation caused by the 1973 oil crisis, though Wilson did manage to help ward off some of the worst of this by increasing pensions and introducing rent and price controls, and also transport subsidies. Regarding Northern Ireland, he secretly offered Libya's dictator, Colonel Gaddafi, £14 million of taxpayers' money to stop supplying arms to the IRA, but Gaddafi demanded more. This didn't become public until 2009. On the 16th of March 1976, Wilson announced that he would resign as Prime Minister, effective on the 5th of April. He was 60 years old and claimed he was exhausted both physically and mentally. Many have argued that the secret scheming against him and rumours of coup plots were the real reason for his going so dramatically and suddenly. He was replaced as Prime Minister by James Callaghan, whose government would struggle on until 1979 with the election of Margaret Thatcher. The period of Labour government under Callaghan was marked by further economic problems, leading to the famous Winter of Discontent, bodies being unburied, rubbish piled up in the streets, and endless industrial action by the unions. However, it is interesting to note that Margaret Thatcher became leader of the Conservative Party in 1975, her policies aligning very much with the coup plotters and the general outlook of the centre-right and traditional elements of British political and military society. It looked as though these groups would get what they wanted without having to revert to staging a military coup to remove a sitting prime minister. And indeed, Thatcher won a landslide victory in 1979 and would rule for the next 11 years. As for Harold Wilson, he died from cancer and Alzheimer's disease in May 1995 at the age of 79. Many thanks for watching. Please subscribe and share, and also visit my audiobook channel, War Stories with Mark Felton. You can also help to support both of my channels at PayPal and Patreon. Details in the description box below.